You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is a good friend, and her name is Laura Bruno. Laura is a trained medical intuitive who does soul readings and intuitive coaching. She is versed in the Tarot, Reiki, and inspires and empowers visionaries and healers. She has written three books. The first one is a tale of her own story called If I Only Had a Brain Injury. Reminds you of the Wizard of Oz. The second one is Schizandra and the Gates of Mu. And she has an e-book out, Lazy Raw Foodist's Guide. Laura spends her free time painting, organic gardening, listening to sacred chants, traveling, reading, and writing. Taking her passion of earth healing and gardening to the next level, Laura is in the final project stage of completing her permaculture design certificate. She might have finished it by now. You can access and subscribe to her wonderful blog and find links to her other two sites here at www.lazyrawfoodist.com. So let's welcome Laura back to the show now. Hi, Laura. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on again.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, and it seems like it's been an age since we've talked, doesn't it?
I think it has been a long time.
Yes, a couple of thousand years at least. So, what are some of the things that have transpired in your world, or some of the things that you'd like to talk about to start us out on the path of having a fireside chat?
Well, let's see. I think the last time I was on was in March of 2014, so a lot has happened.
Whoa.
Since then.
Okay.
Yeah. Business has expanded. The gardens have doubled size, and we now have a full food forest here, and a separate sacred house for classes and my writing, and a guest house for students that come in town. But it's just kind of a sacred space that we've created here, so that we have our little spot of heaven on earth, even though where we are is not exactly where you would expect to find that. So that's been a big process of creating that.
Oh, yes. No doubt about that. But it sounds wonderful.
Yeah. We have really enjoyed being able to do that, and just enjoyed seeing what happens with people when you do create a space. And it's been in the least likely places to do such a thing. So from the yard being this horribly weedy, black walnut infested, unhealthy plants, to all of this thriving goodness. And then our house was a gut rehab, and the house next door wasn't a gut rehab, but it's been definitely given a nice facelift. And just to see what happens to people when you see them come into a house or into a yard that used to be horribly run down, and it's like it infuses them with hope.
Nice. I think you're right.
Yeah. So I don't know. So many things have happened. My father passed away in March of this year, and I spent about 8 weeks in Pennsylvania helping between hospice for him and then transitioning my mom into a whole new life, and just a lot of really big life lessons. So as a result, the permaculture design certificate is not yet completed. I got an extension on it because I just had so many other things going on. But,
oh, good.
Yeah, but life and death and regeneration and just all of, I mean, it's just symbolic of what's going on in the larger world, I think. It's just a little microcosm here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I have a similar tale as you, in that one of my good friends, Helene Lipson, had returned to Placerville to either recover from stage 4 cancer or to go into a hospice, and she found that she needed a place closer to the city, and she wanted to rent my house. So it needed a lot of work on it, so there was a huge transformation that occurred before she could move in, and it was just an amazing experience. She was here for about 4 months, and she just recently passed a few days ago. Mm-hmm. And we just, you know, we had an incredible experience together. And everybody that was with her had an incredible experience. And she was at peace and happy. I mean, truly happy when she passed. And she healed some old wounds with her parents. They've transformed. Mm-hmm. The property has transformed. We've put in a garden where there were weeds. And so it's going to continue. And there will be a plaque of some sort honoring Helene and the Healing Center, or have a memorial garden, Helene Lipson Memorial Garden. So we're going to have a service in a few weeks. And a lot of people loved her, and she just, everybody that she was around, she touched and she moved, or made them laugh. And I'm just such a privilege to have gotten to know her so well in those last times. So anyway, that's my part of the story.
Yeah, and it's just so sacred when you walk with someone on that journey. No matter who they are, whether they're a close relative or a friend or someone that you just met, but it's the right place, right time kind of connection. And I've been privileged because of the work that I do, but also people know the work I do. And then when I meet them privately, for some reason, they feel very comfortable talking about whatever their health challenges are or what's going on with family members. And so I've been very privileged to walk with a lot of people on that transition from life to death. And it's just amazing how life-affirming the death process can be for those who are living, but also for those who are in the dying process. I've seen people just really come to life before they pass.
Yes,
and it's beautiful.
It really is. There's nothing like it.
Yeah. So I'm glad you were able to do that for her.
Oh, I am just so thrilled that we shared the same vision, and you know, I really worked hard to get that house ready for her, because there were so many things that needed to be done, and there would be one setback after another, a water leak and a gas leak and a this and a that, and each thing that came up, we just addressed it, and I dealt with it and passed through it, and at some point, she was able to, on July 4th, Independence Day, she was able to move in, and it was done, the house was done. And she then just brought in her own, crystals, and bought some beautiful drapes that had the pattern of what's that bird that has the beautiful feathers?
A peacock?
Yes. And furnished it nicely, and she was just thrilled. And I remember Claudia Miller came out for a visit. And that was just a few weeks ago, when she was playing some music from the 70s, I think. And we all got up and were lip-syncing and dancing and acting silly in the kitchen. So we had a lot of fun. And she was just an amazing person. And there's never been anybody that I know of like her, and probably never will be. And I just love her to death. Well, I mean, you know, not figuratively speaking.
Right. Love her to life.
But yeah, to life, yes. And I don't believe in death. I think that's an illusion, and that there's a continuum, and that birth and death are just moments in the different dimensions that we drop into and move out of, and that mm-hmm. there's continuity, and we never actually, there's a point at which we, our higher selves or our real selves, don't exist.
Yeah, I've had a few experiences just as someone was passing, sometimes somebody that I didn't even know very well, but for whatever reason, they came into my awareness as they were passing. And the most common experience that I've found that people have is this overwhelmingly intense joy. And I've had it happened when my mom's dad died. I knew that this was around Thanksgiving weekend of, probably 2000, maybe the year 2000, and I knew a grandparent was going to die that weekend, but I didn't know which one, and so I just kind of kept my travel plans and everything just very loose, non-committal, and it ended up that my mom's stepdad had passed, and he happened to have lived about an hour from where I was living at the time. And so she came out, and my aunt came out, and I was able to house them. And then it was just this really sacred experience in the funeral. But the interesting part of it was that I was just kind of lying down the day that he died, taking a little rest. And all of a sudden, it was like there was so much light and so much joy bubbling out of my chest. It was so intense, and I couldn't figure out where it was coming from. And I even had the thought, this is too much for the human body to handle. If this doesn't happen to pass soon, then I'm going to pass. And I happened to look at the clock, and then a few hours later, I found out that my grandfather had died, and he had been convinced that he was going to win the Publisher's Clearinghouse. And apparently, he died on his wife's birthday. She had passed, and he died with the Publisher's Clearinghouse sign, like, welcome, I've won, or whatever, in his hand. And they estimated that the time of death was right when I was having that experience. And it was just this incredible thing, and the deaths that I've seen of other people, they've really been very beautiful. So I've always felt very privileged to have witnessed those kinds of things and experienced them, because it really makes it a non-fearful experience.
Right. Well, of course, there are also experiences of people who have had near-death experiences, mm-hmm. and one of the most famous ones that I know of is Danion Brinkley, who was struck by lightning three times while he was on the bed talking on the telephone.
Wow.
And, the first time it took him months and months and months to recover, and he couldn't talk, and then he found he had abilities that he didn't have before.
Mm-hmm.
And the second time, I think he was able to recover a little bit quicker. But, it's just the same thing, zap hits the, and he's on the other side of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he used to be kind of a jerk, and he used a different word, but I don't want to say it online on the air. But he learned that he had the ability to pick the winning horses at the races.
Oh.
So he tested that out for a while, being a little bit on the materialistic side at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But the zaps actually, as the information that he got from the various floating beings that looked like they were coated in diamonds and had televisions inserted into their tummies, and they weren't Teletubbies, they were future visions. As those things started to become clear, apparently they started coming true as well. So he wrote quite a few books on that. It's a fascinating story.
Wow, no, I've not heard of that.
Yeah, Danion Brinkley, he's been on the show once or twice, and he's a wonderful guy, very funny, and he's still alive, doing well, and he consults or coaches veterans when they're ready to pass, and that is such an important task.
Mm-hmm.
Here in America, we don't we're kind of taught to not think about death. You know,
mm-hmm.
we're taught to think about retirement and doing future things and vacations, but never that moment that, you know, could come at any moment. And
mm-hmm.
so a lot of us are in denial about that subject and then find ourselves, you know, at that place without any support and with no understanding of or little understanding of how things work or the essence or soul or
mm-hmm.
do we go on, do we not? And we're kind of left to make it all up, and we don't do a very good job of it. And it's really valuable to have someone who knows how to coach you into the next world
mm-hmm.
consciously, because
right.
that's a whole different experience than just, you know, waking up and not knowing where you are, and you can make some mistakes, apparently,
mm-hmm.
In that process. Have you found that to be true for your clients or for others?
Well, I found it true to be true for my clients, but I've had it my own sort of bizarre. It wasn't a near-death experience in the traditional sense, but at the time, after I had my brain injury, the 1998 one that was the more severe one, after I had that, I woke up the next day at my parents' house, and I didn't know how I had gotten there, and I was in my old bed from when I was a teenager, and I actually thought that I had died, and that I was haunting their house, and they had gone to work, and I woke up, and I was wandering around the house, and everything was silent, and there's a graveyard behind their house. There's like a huge hedge of trees, but then there's a graveyard back there, and I was so convinced that I had died, or that I needed to at least find out if I had died, that I actually went walking in the graveyard to try to find my grave.
Wow.
And a deer finally approached me, and the deer could see me, and I thought, okay, that deer can see me now. I know animals can see spirits, so
yeah.
this doesn't prove I'm still alive, but maybe I should go back to the house, because if I am alive, then maybe I need to eat something. And so I went back in, and then I thought, oh, well, there's a phone here. I could call my parents at work. So I called them at work, and they picked up the phone, and I thought, okay, well, if they can hear me, then I'm still alive. And they both heard me, so I was like, oh, okay, I'm not dead. They were like, okay, maybe we're coming home from work. You're worse off than we thought. But
wow.
it was this totally surreal experience where I really did have to come to terms with the fact that, okay, you know, you might have passed, and, you know,
right.
how was your life, and all of that. So I didn't see the stereotypical white light and hear the, you know, I kind of heard that crackle thing that a lot of people hear.
Oh, yeah.
But my experience was a little different than the typical near-death experience, of which many, many of my clients have had the more typical kind. But having gone through that, it definitely made me realize, okay, you know, I'm not afraid to die, because my response was just very practical. Like, okay, well, do I have to make lunch? And, you know, where's my grave? And where am I supposed to be?
Wow. Well, that is interesting. I've had moments similar to yours where I actually wondered if, you know, how we could tell if we were alive or dead. You know, how
mm-hmm.
would you know? Because I've heard that the astral realms and some of the other lower realms that are above us are quite similar, but they're not visible to us because they're not physical.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you know? I mean, that a lot of people are confused when they die because they see everything around their house and everything is the same. And so it has occurred to me that it could be a moment of confusion, to say the least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had some ghosts occasionally, or spirits kind of haunt me. The ex-lover of a friend of mine who died, and I didn't know him, but he started kind of waking me up in the morning because he had messages for my friend. And I was like, okay, who is this? And it's 5 a.m. You know, he had lived in the UK, so, you know, his time was much later, but I was living on the West Coast. So it was very early morning wake-up calls, and finally I contacted her, and I said, look, I don't want to interfere with your grieving process, but, you know, he didn't really realize he was dead, and he just thought you weren't paying attention to him. And, I mean, it was this whole healing process that came about, but I basically had to do life coaching for this person who was dead but didn't realize he was dead because he had died in an accident and really wasn't expecting it, and you know, had used drugs in his life, and so he just thought he was having a really bad trip or something. So that was an interesting experience, but very healing eventually for everyone involved.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, so kind of strange things sometimes, but as far as people that I have as clients who get a terminal diagnosis, I mean, a lot of times a terminal diagnosis is not actually terminal, and they end up healing once they find a reason to live.
Right.
But right. In some cases, it really does go the route of death, and I just find that helping people to get prepared for it and to make peace with the people that they're leaving behind, that seems to be the most important thing.
Right, 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 to have some closure and, essentially, you know, all that you remember is the love that was there, and even in the worst of relationships, it seems that all that is really lasting is the love between people. And even if you don't experience that and you don't understand that process, you can know that deep down beneath, your siblings or parents' horrible, evil behavior, they actually loved you. And that it's said that we contract with these people before we come in to give us the experience that we get for a specific reason. And I don't know if that's true for everyone or for some people or whatever, but I do know that I was born to a couple of bohemians in Santa Barbara, and they were both alcoholics, and my dad was an intellectual, and my mother was an artist and sensitive, and he used to talk about the Bilderbergs when I was a little kid. I was like 7 years old, and he'd say he'd be drunk, and he'd take out a bill, you know, a dollar bill or something, and pretend to wipe his butt with it and say,
gosh,
the Bilderbergs own the world. And that was a long time before Alex Jones was getting on his bullhorn. So I was getting an edumacation even as a little kid, you know. So,
yeah, you had a very unusual childhood.
Oh, there's no question about it. No question about it. And my adulthood was unusual, and every day seems to be rather Alice in Wonderland-like. So I'm guessing it just continues on until you're seeing bubbles and squares and floating animals and stuff like that. I see them in the sky often, and they're not stars.
Yeah,
it's very interesting. I don't know what they are, but I call them unidentified thingamabobs, because it seems that, you know, there are no streetlights at the end of the road here in the foothills, and so at night when you go out, you have a clear vision of the stars as much as you can, in a city, near a city.
Right.
And I'll always be attracted to a particular light or star, and I'll just look at it. You know, it just draws my focus. And I will look at it, and I can't look away. And suddenly it will start moving and go right, left, up, down, and all kinds of different ways, and vary its intensity and the colors. And sometimes they're just like white and blue and yellow and sometimes red. They may be American creations. I don't know what they are. Never have figured it out, but they're out there.
Some of the places that I've lived have had stronger experiences like that than others, but you can have them pretty much anywhere on the planet, you know, if you're
by the way,
the right
Laura,
time.
We have a caller.
Oh.
That's a first. Somebody's called in. I thought we might as well take the call.
Sure.
So is the caller on the air? Is the caller on yet?
Yes, I am. My name is Robin, and I have a question for about your guest, Lance.
Oh, sure.
Well, it's kind of difficult. I don't really know how to ask it, but does she believe that you were talking about death and people not knowing if they're really dead or where they are a few moments ago. And over 10 years ago, there was a falling out that I had with my daughter, my own flesh and blood. And it's never been resolved. I mean, it could have been, it should have been over all this time. And it's and now I try to, any little thing I try to do to mend things is met with, deer in the headlights response. Let's just put it that way. Could she have died and been replaced, or did I die? Do you ever hear stories like that? I guess I didn't die. I'm talking to you, but
you know, it's. I'm just kind of tuning in a little bit too. I don't get the sense that she died and was replaced, but we all have our paths. You know, when we come in here, and oftentimes we choose our parents because there's either something to work out with them or as souls, or there's something that the parent can provide that will trigger us to accept gifts or to deal with shadow things, or there's usually something where when it's your immediate family, they often will trigger you. I mean, that's not accidental. And so depending on where she is in her own journey, I mean, a lot of times it's hard to get real. You know, it's hard to look at shadow things. It's hard to have a relationship with someone that wants to have a deeper relationship with you than you're ready to have with them. And so I have a sense that your daughter's in some kind of process herself, and I would suggest prayer or Reiki or just doing a little healing ceremony with crystals, even something that is able to give you peace but without having to go at it directly. She seems more like somebody that you'll have luck with sort of through the back door. Kind of,
yeah.
Maybe there'll be a situation where you're all thrown together and it does open things, but it just seems like connecting directly at this time seems maybe counterproductive.
Yeah.
Well, another thing that is really important, which you may have mentioned, Laura, is to forgive yourself for whatever perceived wrongs you created in the relationship, and then forgive your daughter. And then let it go. And sometimes it's good to write down some of the things that you think you did or think that she did or whatever, because all of that stuff is really just kind of an illusion. And,
yeah.
You know, we were talking about love being all that's left, and it sometimes just takes letting go and allowing her to be who she is,
mm-hmm.
to bring her back, because once you let go and you've forgiven yourself and you've forgiven her, there's nothing left to do. And you can do that with a person who's passed on as well. You know, people wonder, well, what do I do about this one? Well, you do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it works outside of time and can go into the past and into the future. So that opens up the space for her to do what she needs to do, when she chooses to do it, whatever that is.
Yeah. There's also a really good meditation. If you just Google or whatever search engine that you use, Laura Bruno Blue Room. So blue, like the color blue, and room, like a room in your house. It's actually a meditation that my good friend Timothy Glenn, who's a frequent guest on Zany Mystic.
Oh, yeah, that's a wonderful one.
He shared this meditation with me a long time ago, and I ended up posting it on my blog because it's just so helpful for these sorts of situations where you just, for whatever reason, cannot have that face-to-face conversation where you really work things out on a soul level. Instead, you imagine that you're in a blue room, the carpet's blue, the walls are blue, the furniture's blue, everything has that blue frequency to it, and then it's a soul-to-soul visit that you have there. So your soul connects with your daughter's soul or whoever's soul you're doing this with, and it's almost like an exchange of baggage. It's kind of like, hey, you know, we have an acknowledgement that we've had a past together, maybe many pasts together, and you have parts of me and I have parts of you. I'm going to give these parts back to you, and then I'm going to take mine back. And what that does is rebalance everything so that your relationship is not about avoiding giving things back to someone or trying to get your stuff back. It takes the compulsion out of it. And I find that a lot of times when people do that meditation, something happens pretty shortly afterwards. Either there's a big blow up, but it clears the air, or there's a heart-to-heart conversation, or there's just some kind of closure. The only time it doesn't really work is if one or the other person is really like an energy vampire or a narcissistic person or something like that. Then they tend to kind of take over the room. But that's good information as well. For most normal relationships, though, the blue room meditation is incredibly healing.
Well, I wouldn't classify this as normal, but that's good. Thank you.
It would be worth a try.
Yeah. Oh, I'll definitely try it. I'll go there. Thank you so much. I appreciate
it. You're welcome.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. Well, you know, Laura, that was interesting because I think that's the first time I've taken a call on the air. We tried it about 10 years ago when I first started doing the show, but the technology was so bad that it was like, hello, and then they'd say hello. And it was a terrible process. So I just said, no, let's not. I've only got an hour. Let's focus on the guest. And people want to hear the guest anyway.
Uh-huh.
And here I am doing most of the talking tonight. So.
Yeah, but we're covering the same material. So
right.
It doesn't
right.
really matter who it comes through.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Well, it's funny because I had a feeling that you were going to get a call tonight. I was thinking before I got on the phone, I thought, I wonder if he ever has phone calls come through, because I just had a feeling someone would call, so I wasn't actually that
surprised. Well, you're pretty darned intuitive, I'll tell you. I mean, if anybody can pick that one up, you would. That's good. If you had to look into your crystal ball, what would you say was going to be would be some of the things that would be happening on a global scale to the planet? We know that, and I'm sure that because you're into permaculture and all that, and we've talked about this before, that there's a degradation of the food supply, the water supply, and that we're basically being altered and changed through our DNA and given diseases and various other things. And you can go as far down that rabbit hole as you like, but it does seem that either can't go on at some point without the masses awakening, or there would have to be some kind of total sleep, and you know, people would be living in a completely matrix-like world that was controlled and run by others, which is how it is now. What do you feel are some of the things that we might experience in the near future?
Well, it's interesting because I have clients all over the world, and so I have a little bit of a different take on what's happening just based on my own practice. When I'm hearing from people in Australia, Canada, Ireland, New Jersey, San Francisco, Hawaii, and they're all kind of going through a lot of the same themes of experiences, even though they have nothing in common.
Huh.
then to me, there's something else going on. And I've noticed this for years. And what I don't claim to know, you know, I don't think there is just one reality. And I don't think that it's set. It really is more along the lines of where is your consciousness most aligned most of the time. That becomes more your dominant frequency.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, I don't know if there's going to be just a kind of major split in realities, because it does seem like there's kind of one part of humanity is just getting really lazy and sick and AI and prescription drugs and, you know, McDonald's and, all, you know, give me handouts for everything. I don't want to have to work. All of that. It's like there's this learned helplessness happening on the one hand, but then there's this undeniable awakening that really is happening, that goes beyond just kind of spiritual bypassing, New Age Borg kind of stuff. I mean, I'm finding that there really are people who are radically stepping into their own power and who are tapping into the earth and who are being inspired with incredible creativity in anything from music to sound healing to gardening to community food forests to painting to creative ways of co-housing. I mean, you name it. There are so many things happening, and there's so much inspiration happening. I'm getting goosebumps talking about it, just because I know so many of these people that are working on incredible ideas. They're coming from somewhere, and they are ideas that are, they're very out of the box kinds of ideas, and not everyone is interested in them. I mean, we're living in northern Indiana, and there's not a lot of interest for what we're doing here. But at the same time, there's a surprising amount of interest compared to what we would have thought there was. And I also find this, too. I mean, again and again and again, I hear from clients, oh, I wish that you lived near me, or I wish I lived near your other clients, because I'm the only person I know who thinks this way. I hear that from probably 80% of the people I talk to. I'm the only person I know that's interested in this. You're lucky. You talk to people all week, so you know there's an awakening happening.
Right.
And I am lucky, but it feels like people are being seeded around the planet. I mean, there's a lot of people that are living in places that they didn't really feel like they chose, but the place chose them. And it's almost like you're seeding it with possibilities, and then when you're done, then you're sort of like Johnny Appleseed and you go on somewhere else, but you're not just planting apple trees. You're also planting consciousness, and you're planting an awareness of how life could be, how beautiful life could be. And there's a real role for visionaries right now, because you can get lost in that rabbit hole, you know? It's just like a whole rabbit warren now of all the things that are crumbling and all of the darkness and the manipulation and all of that. But you can also just look beyond that and say, well, I'm going to be a stronger creator, and I have this vision, and it's beautiful, and I'm going to summon the resources to make this happen. And it's incredible and consistent that the resources come and the vision gets birthed if the people really have that determination, and the determination really does come from love. So I don't think there's one reality happening. One thing that I am noticing, though, is that people are kind of slipping timelines or slipping. In Starhawk's book, The Fifth Sacred Thing, she talks about El Mundo Bueno and El Mundo Malo, and I've written about that concept quite a few times, but this idea that you have kind of the good world and then the bad world or the evil world, and that they're separated by a film as thin as the film on milk, like when you leave a cup of milk out and it gets that little little skin on the top, that it doesn't take that much to go from the bad reality to the good reality. But I'm finding that people, because the energy is so chaotic, people are slipping. You know, they're going along and things are wonderful in their life, and then all of a sudden it's like they have this total downward spiral of horrible bad luck, and they're getting diagnosed with these absurd things for them, you know, like terminal cancer or hepatitis C or whatever, and they're calling me because they're like, what is going on with me? And, you know, where am I messed up? And I thought things were going well, and it's like, oh, you slipped. You know, you just kind of, you changed timelines or you changed realities or something, and you just have to find your way back, and you build some overlays to get yourself back into El Mundo Bueno. Mm. And it really can be that easy, but where I find people are having challenges is that the energies are more chaotic than people are used to. And because of, you know, the New Age stuff and Law of Attraction, there's a lot of shaming involved with that. Like if something bad happens to you or if you're not a millionaire or whatever, you can go on this bender of shame and, you know, oh, I'm so awful and, you know, why can't I get this right? And when that happens and somebody gets knocked off a good timeline and they're in this negative thing, if they start believing that inner mind chatter, then that becomes their reality. But it doesn't need to. A lot of times they just need to be reminded, hey, you're the creator, and, you know, this is not about judgment here, but really, what kind of beauty do you want to create in the world? What kind of experiences do you want to live through? Let's line up with that.
Right, right. That makes a lot of sense, and I do try to use that myself in my life, especially during days when it seems that you know, the mind tends to think that everything's going to be this way forever. And so you have to remind yourself that this is just a moment in time and that everything will change in moments or in the next now or tomorrow.
Yeah, and what I've been telling people is it's kind of like you're in a boat on a very, very choppy ocean. That's the energies that are just kind of pummeling the planet right now.
Right.
And, I mean, it's very intense, but if you get knocked out of the boat, you have some choices. You know, you can scream and panic and just drown, or, you know, you can be freaking out and be like, oh, no, the sharks are going to get me. Oh, it's terrible. Or you can have some calmness and go, okay, I have on a life preserver. And in this case, the life preserver would be, okay, what are your tools? You know, what's your toolkit for when you have a bad day? What's your toolkit when the unexpected happens to you? How do you keep yourself from freaking out? And, you know, maybe it's aromatherapy for some people. Maybe it's a happy music song. Maybe it's, you know, a cup of tea. I mean, for everybody, it's something different. It might be writing poetry, but know what your tools are that reliably get you back into a good space. And then, you know, get back in the boat or learn how to surf. You know, it's like, you don't complain about how choppy the waters are. This is the nature of our times.
Right.
They are
right.
Very intense. But it can also be very exciting, because if you are in a very different space in your life than you would like to be, chaos is your friend, at least it can be, because you can get from here to there, you know, lickety-split, that would have taken you forever in a linear time frame just by hopping the right wave and enjoying the journey.
Yeah, that's a good point. I like that. I like that. So one of my guests writes about near-death experiences, and she seemed to think that there was a correlation between chaos and near-death experiences. In other words, there is a kind of a social chaos that can occur at the human level throughout the globe, and that it's very similar to the same process that happens to somebody when they have a near-death experience, and that she felt that humanity itself would have one of these, call it a near-death experience, when, you know, everything is chaotic and they don't know, nobody knows what's going on, and there's a great deal of confusion. And she seemed to feel that that was another version of crossing over and coming back.
Well, I know a number of my friends that are more conscious healer types have been having a similar experience that I've had, where you have this kind of weird sense that you're kind of half awake, half asleep, and you have this sense that you're connecting with your future self, and that your future self is coming back into our present time and correcting things or giving you levels of awareness. And it feels like that's happening on a much larger scale. I mean, we're having a lot of help right now. we could have destroyed ourselves collectively many times over by now. Mm. And if you've read any of Velikovsky's work, you know that, you know, there have been major catastrophes and you know, death experiences on this planet. So it's not like we are just so privileged that we're never going to have that. I mean, I think living with a healthy awareness of death actually makes life stronger and more vital. And actually having that awareness that we could all be in this near-death experience, because the planet certainly is being taken to the brink, mm-hmm. That's when evolution occurs traditionally. Mm-hmm. You know, evolution doesn't usually happen just because organisms are like, it would be fun. I mean, there's usually some sort of pressing urge that it's evolve or die. And you know, as a gardener, I see that kind of stuff. It's fascinating to me to watch, if you give the right environment to plants, that they will thrive. But then there's these pioneer plants that they thrive in the areas where nothing else thrives, but they are thriving. And so it's just kind of fascinating, because people are that way too. You know, there are some people that will thrive the worse their life is. And it's not like they're gluttons for punishment, but it's just how they're made. And so I don't really know exactly what's going to happen, but we're definitely in the throes of some kind of major transition. I don't have enormous hope for sort of the general population a lot of times, because it just seems like there's just such a wave towards, you know, the brainwashed masses and everything's on the iPhones and the, you know, video games and all of that. But even then, I encounter people that are involved in these kinds of things that are finding something in it that triggers an awakening in them. So I don't know. I find it a very exciting time to be alive, though.
Right, right. Well, we do live in interesting times, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
But, there was a movie or a series that came out a while back, and I don't think I had a chance to see it, but it was the gist of it was that everybody in the world was suddenly passed out. They were out for like a few minutes. Mm-hmm. And then when they came to, they had these barrages of future incidents that would clue them in as to what was happening. And so the idea is being explored through the film industry, so it often dovetails into what's really going on, if you notice, because that's one of the ways that information is released into the public.
Yeah, well, and it's also interesting because, you know, there's mainstream Hollywood, but then there are so many independent filmmakers now, and so many kind of offshoots that are now becoming successful. And we've been watching a lot of movies. Since we moved my office next door, now we have this room that we've turned into a movie room for us.
Oh,
and
nice.
We've been so busy caring for David's parents and doing other things for the last few years that we have a lot of free movies to catch up on just from the library. But one of the things we've been watching recently is the whole Marvel film series, you know, that whole enterprise. And some of those are just really, really well done. And we've been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is, you know, there's a lot of shoot 'em up and violence.
Oh,
and
I love
in
that
it.
Series.
Yeah, but it
I
really is very
it.
Philosophical.
Yes, I've seen that. I've been through it several times already, and I'm waiting for the next series to come out, and they've already aired it, so I don't know what the wait is, but I'm just dying to see the next one.
Yeah, and I mean, we watch one or two episodes whenever, but it's interesting the level of discussion that will generate for us for a few days in a row, and we'll wake up in the morning and obviously have been processing things from it. But I find that it's hopeful in a way that that kind of discussion is happening. And it's something, one of the reasons that I rented the house next door was to have a dedicated writing office, because I have been feeling very led to get back to writing fiction. I just find that there's so many topics that are so difficult to address right now. And, you know, we don't even necessarily have the vocabulary or the context in our world to talk about it in a direct way, but you throw it into a story, and that is an age-old human way of processing life and of coming up with solutions. And so I wouldn't say I'm a Pollyanna, because I do realize that there's a lot of really dramatic things, and I mean the level of intensity that I deal with on a daily basis with clients. I mean, I know that it's not all lollipops and candy canes out there.
Right.
But I do have this strong appreciation for the fact that adversity does build character, and that when a challenge happens to an individual or a challenge happens to a society, there are many, many, many choice points. And yeah, some people really fail miserably, and you're like, whoa, you know. But there are also those heroes, you know, and a lot of them are unexpected heroes. And it's just really encouraging to see this coming out in films and television shows and other things, where people are they're stepping into their humanity, and they're stepping into this inner sense of power and self-respect. And I think that any kind of dramatic shift is really going to require that we reach a tipping point of people that are willing to do that and face the dark parts, face the scary parts, face the things that you're really ashamed of, and that, you know, what you were talking about to Robin when she called in about the importance of forgiveness. I think we have a lot of that to do as a culture and as individuals, but it's incredibly transformative whenever you do that.
It's funny that you should mention about Heroes, because that was one of my favorite series when it was on years ago. And it recently came out with a sequel, something like Heroes Returns, or, you know, The Return of the Heroes. And it was really quite good. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And one that I would recommend to you, since you like the Mar-Vell series, and I do too, is a very interesting United Kingdom production from the BBC, and it's called Orphan Black. And it's about clones, and there are six women who, you know, come together. They slowly discover each other, and they're identical clones. And one is the head of a corporation, and she's quite ruthless. It is just a brilliant piece of work, and the woman who plays all of those different clones is just incredibly talented. And there are gay characters and questionable characters, and there's mystery, and there's, you know, it goes back to a time when they don't know who made the clones and where did the formula go, and so on and so forth. And it just gets thicker and thicker, and it's really quite good. So that's one you might want to keep an eye on.
We'll put it in the queue.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah, so it's just, I just find that it's a great time to be alive, and life does continue, and I think time cycles, and, I mean, there's a lot of potential right now, and it feels like we're having a lot of help, you know, from our future selves, from past selves, from, you know, earlier societies that we're able to see into the future of what were the possibilities. And it just feels like this can be a very rich time for people that are willing to open themselves to changes.
Have you ever had clients that you've been able to identify returned from a previous period, such as Atlantis or Lemuria or Egypt or several of those?
Oh, yeah, lots.
Can you talk about that for a moment before the end of the show? I think that's really interesting,
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people on the planet right now that were in Atlantis and in Lemuria, and there were a lot of Lemurians in Atlantis, and there wasn't just one fall of Atlantis, but I have a lot of memories from a lifetime in Atlantis.
Actually,
Shazandra and the Gates of Mu is a fiction book, but a lot of the information in there about Atlantis was actually stuff that I remembered. So like the details of the city and the some of the intrigue that was going on there. But there was a lot of what's going on now. I mean, there was a lot of genetic modification happening and weather technology. It was magic weather technology, but it was weather manipulation. And it really feels like we are almost in kind of Atlantis redux or something. It's like, okay, you know, are we going to repeat this? And I mean, ancient literature, I'm spacing on the name now. The Hindu,
the Mahabharata.
Anyway, it's basically describing nuclear war. And the battles and all of that. And so, I mean, clearly, we've been here before. I mean, we have all these legends, and it just feels like there are a lot of souls here wanting to get things right. And so it's kind of a near repeat. And I see that in individuals where they'll have kind of a near repeat of a lifetime before the same players. It's like everything's lined up, and it's just the opportunity to make a different choice this time. And it feels kind of like we're there on a grand scale. There's a lot of the same players. Obviously, there's other people here, too, that weren't in Atlantis, but there's a lot of ancient Egyptian souls here. There's a lot of Atlantean souls. There's a lot of Lemurians and off-world people. And I mean, it's kind of like Star Wars here, you know, the space bar or whatever.
There's a lot of
beings here right now.
Absolutely. I sometimes think that if we actually saw things as they are, that's what it would look like.
Yeah.
You know, but we don't, so, yet, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, well
Laura,
and the veils are thinning.
And they are thinning, yes, and hopefully they'll continue to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that reveals more to us, and then we have better information to act on.
Right.
But
So everyone's in such a hurry for the shift to happen, but I know from my work and everything that faster is not necessarily better. You have to do it at a pace where people don't lose their minds.
That's right. And be careful what you wish for. So, well, I really have had fun talking to you again tonight, and it's nice to touch base with you, and you want to mention your website again before we sign off so people can sign up for your wonderful blog, for one thing?
Sure, thank you. It's just Laura Bruno, L-A-U-R-A, Bruno, BRUNO.wordpress.com. I've pretty much consolidated all my websites onto that one at the moment. And there's hundreds and hundreds of articles on there and videos and links and resources and art and all of that. So should be able to keep people pretty well informed and lots of techniques. And that meditation, again, that we talked about was called The Blue Room. And there's another meditation also listed, which is the Satyam meditation. It's S as in Sam, A-T-Y-U-M as in mother. If you just look up Laura Bruno Satyam, that's another really good one for anyone that's trying to process grief or anger or a lot of those shadow emotions. It just helps to really get that released and transmuted and helps people to just get clear.
Well, terrific. Well, I think we've reached the end of our road here tonight.
Yeah.
and the view is gorgeous. So thank you so much for coming back, Laura. And we'll see what we talk about next time.
All right. Thank you. Really enjoyed it. Have a good night.
All right. You too. Good night, Laura. Good night, everybody.